This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, folks, welcome in to Pickaxe and Roll, brought to you by our good friends over at Bet Online and Number 38. I'm your host, Ryan Blackburn at NBA Blackburn on Twitter, part of the Mile High Sports Podcast Network. I didn't screw that up this time. Really appreciate getting that one right. Really enjoy all the love and support on the podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. It is Tuesday night when I am recording this one. 24 hours after the Boston Celtics officially became NBA champions. They are the best team in the league. They're the team that outlasted everybody. And it is just very clear throughout the regular season that they were the best team. And in retrospect, they had the easiest path to the playoffs. So they had the easiest path to the NBA finals. And they were the freshest team. They were the best team. And it just made a lot of sense the way that this season sort of played out. This is one of the things about the modern NBA. It's just very hard to repeat. Nuggets fans knew that going into it, but I'm not sure if the Nuggets fully appreciated just how hard it was going to be. And they got caught, and the best team in the league won. So it's a tough pill to swallow, of course, if you're a Nuggets fan. If you're hoping for kind words from me, you've come to the wrong place. So look, it is what it is. We have plenty to talk about. There are going to be some things. We'll do some parting thoughts like I have in the main topic section here. Parting thoughts on the 2023-24 season. Second segment, we will do the best teams in 2024-25. And then third segment, I talked about something over on the Locked On Nuggets pod with Swipa today that I wanted to expand upon in this particular podcast. So we will talk about that in just a little bit. Hopefully everybody's having a good time. Cedric is in here. What's up, Cedric? Imagine if we meet the Celtics in the finals and were to beat them, Ryan. Maybe. I think that Denver would have been gassed. I do not expect that they would have been able to win against the Celtics. I think that Denver would have struggled to stop them. And like, especially if given a seven-game series, I think they would have figured some things out against the Nuggets. And then, as great as Jokic is, he's one guy. And that is a hard thing to swallow. Like Jamal Murray would have been very good, but it is a really tough matchup to go against Jrue Holiday, Derek White, Jaylen Brown, and Jason Tatum on the perimeter. So who knows what would have happened. Maybe they would have won, but I don't think that you can really go backwards in this conversation. The Celtics won. The Nuggets didn't make it. That is their prerogative. The Nuggets had to get through some tough matchups. And even if they had gotten through the T-Wolves, who knows? Maybe they wouldn't have gotten through Luka and the Mavericks. Like, I'm not going to sit here and predict like it was definitely going to happen. Dropping Scoops is here. Hey, Ryan. Hello, Dropping Scoops. Really appreciate you stopping by. Osmosis Jones says, is Big Al going to retire? Al Horford, age 38 season, he is not going to be retiring. I think he said that he was going to come back for another year. He's got one more year on his contract. I would expect that to be his final year. But Big Al finally getting a ring, pretty cool to see. Dropping Scoops is Dropping Scoops. Look at this. He says, I reported in the morning that Denver officials have been in regular contact with Creighton's Baylor Shireman. I was wondering what you think. I'm not surprised by that. He's in the draft range that I think the Nuggets are going to be exploring, whether that's at the 28th overall pick, 56th overall pick. Maybe they make a trade and they're somewhere in the middle. I'm going to be writing about Baylor Shireman for tomorrow. So I am not surprised. I don't expect him to be like this awesome defensive player, but he can do some great things offensively. Kind of thinking like a Duncan Robinson type with the way that he shoots, but maybe a little bit more playmaking. That would be interesting. I would definitely be intrigued by that sort of scoop. So thank you for dropping the scoop in there. All right, I forgot to do this. Got to pay some bills. This podcast is brought to you by the good folks over at BetOnline, your number one source for all of your sports betting needs this season, from baseball, golf, soccer, right up to the top fights in UFC, MMA, and boxing. Every stat, every matchup, and even live odds and spreads while the games are being played. When the game's over, head on over to the casino and get in on a game of online blackjack or poker or some of their slots games. Head over to the website today and get in on the action. Welcome, get a 50% off welcome bonus when you use the promo code BELIEVE on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here. Okay, let's get into it. I think at this stage that the Nuggets are in an interesting position where they've had a month off. They've had a little bit of time to sort of sit and kind of seethe a little bit. Like, you see all these other teams having success and you think, yeah, we're up 20 in game seven in the second round and could have been one of the final four teams remaining. And then they screwed it up. Nuggets fans have been seething. They've been hating it. The Nuggets have been seething. They have not been super active on social media, that's for sure. Although Jokic is dancing up a storm. Apparently he just won a horse race over the weekend, so good for him. Been talking to his guy Bogdan Bogdanovic. He might be going to represent Serbia in the Olympics, which would be very cool. Hopefully he gets that done. But I wanted to share some parting thoughts in this first segment. And I think that this is some stuff you get to really see how the playoffs play out. You see how everything sort of comes together. And the one thing that really sticks to me, I said earlier today on Locked On, fatigue, exhaustion, injury, it sort of ruled the day again in the NBA. Every year, especially of the last 5 years, it feels like it's a war of attrition every single time. I don't know what it is, but it feels like so many times in these Western Conference Finals, Eastern Conference Finals, NBA Finals, the teams that finally get there are just gassed because they had to work so hard to get through the first round and the second round in order to do it. Some teams had to work harder. Some teams did not. Think about it from the Western Conference perspective. The Timberwolves were gassed after duking it out with the Nuggets in a 7-game series and then couldn't respond to the Timberwolves or to the Mavericks because they only had 2 days off or 3 days off or whatnot. And then they had to get right back into a series and they were suddenly immediately down 3-0. And then the Mavericks playing some better teams. I think that that one was a little bit more about just the Celtics having a talent gap between them. But I don't think that fatigue, exhaustion, injury should rule the day in the NBA going forward. Like, I think that there's got to be something that changes that. It does feel like so many times injuries do affect things, and Osmosis Jones kind of puts it into perspective here. Guys get hurt every single year. It's not like it's just this time. Murray got hurt this year for Denver and clearly was not healthy going into the playoffs anyway. But it just sort of feels like to me that the Nuggets are needing to be in a position where they are fresher heading into the playoffs going forward. And I'll talk about that in the third segment a little bit more when I do a radical discussion on the non-Jokic minutes. I think that that's going to be a fun conversation for people. But that's one thing. Fatigue, exhaustion, injury. Number two, the Celtics capitalized right when they needed to. I said this on the last podcast. Their trades for Porzingis and Drew Holiday were fantastic. They were perfect moves for that team at the right time. And if they had delayed that by a year, they would not have been able to do those moves. Because you get Jaylen Brown locked into his max contract, like a big number that he would be getting. Jason Tatum gets a big number. And then you're into the luxury tax and you're into the second apron. And in that situation, the Celtics wouldn't even be able to aggregate contracts. They wouldn't be able to do it. So they wouldn't have been able to make that deal in the first place, let alone two deals of aggregating salaries. And that's just one thing that you start to realize that, like, hey, they caught lightning in a bottle. Denver caught lightning in a bottle the year before, where it felt like every team had a down year and the Nuggets were just the one great team in a year where there were a bunch of good teams and no other great teams. The Mavericks also caught lightning in a bottle this year, and they made deals at the right time. They capitalized when they needed to as well, trading for PJ Washington, Daniel Gafford, two guys that were, I think, depressed assets, worse in terms of value than the players that they actually are, playing for Washington, playing for Charlotte. Very similar to when Denver got Aaron Gordon back in the day, where he was a depressed asset despite the fact that he was better than the player that he ultimately looked like he was in Orlando and then certainly became in Denver. And Dallas made out like bandits. They did a great job. But up until that point, Dallas was a little bit shaky. They had started to figure some things out around Luka and Kyrie, but for the most part, they had just a bunch of guys, and they didn't really know how to put it together. Sometimes when you get a couple of different players, like a PJ Washington, you're like, okay, we know he's going to be our power forward. We know Luka's going to be, like, not the, like, he's technically in the backcourt, but he's like their three from a size perspective. We know that those guys are going to be there. We know a center's going to be on the floor. We know Kyrie's going to be there. And then they just play a defensive guy in Derek Jones Jr. And lo and behold, it makes sense. And they're able to piece together their rotation, have 48 minutes of great center play as a result. It's pretty cool. It is pretty cool to see. And Dallas capitalized on it at the right time. They got lucky. Maybe not lucky. I mean, you have to get lucky in this situation. It doesn't mean that they weren't smart, but they found a way to capitalize. Will they be able to do it again? Who knows? Next, the top four teams in salary this year, I believe it was Golden State, the Clippers, Was it the Lakers? No, it wasn't the Lakers. It was another couple of luxury tax teams. There were a bunch of teams at the top that just combined to win four playoff games. I know it was Golden State and the LA Clippers at the top of that because they're making so many, they're having so many guys make so much money. Number five was Boston. Number six was Denver. So it's not like you can just say, oh yeah, you still have to pay in order to win in the NBA. But I do think that we're going to get into kind of a different rhythm here. Oh, one of them was Phoenix. I do remember that. A little bit of a different rhythm with some of these teams that pay as much as they do, that you got to be sure. You got to be extremely, extremely sure, and you have to be proactive and can't let some of these luxury tax bills pile up without fundamentally great results. The Clippers are the ultimate example of how to do this badly. The Warriors are just like, this is reaping the benefits of winning a second of a fourth title, like a second chance at a title in 2022. They got that done. This is what they have to deal with because of it. But I just think that the jig is up with those teams. All four of those teams, I think, are going to be in a really, really bad spot going forward. And I'm not really surprised by that. Number five, relying on cheap, young talent is smart and good, and that should be a good indicator for Denver because Calvin Booth is doing that. You see what Boston has done. One of the things that's sort of underrated about their team is, yes, they have a great top six, but Sam Hauser's been in their organization for a number of years. Same with Luke Kornet. Same with some of their other young guys as well. Peyton Pritchard is in his fourth year. He signed an extension. He's on that Zeke Nagy contract that, well, it looks a lot better for Boston. We'll see what happens with Zeke. But it does feel like young, cheap talent and having those guys that can develop while your starters are very pricey is a smart pathway to go to. It just involves playing them, and it makes it so important for player development to be a thing. You can't just ignore it. It's gotta happen, because if it doesn't, then you're dead, as the Nuggets sort of figured out. And last one, next year I think is just going to look a lot different, and probably not in a fun way for a lot of teams. There's going to be a lot of really good teams. I'm not sure how many great teams there are going to be. We'll talk about it in the next segment, just which teams I think are going to be the best. But I think what we're going to see is something a little bit closer to the 2022-23 season, where Denver led the Western Conference with 53 wins. It might end up being 55 or 56, but you're going to have so many teams. Like this year, there were like 20 teams that had a positive net rating. 20 teams or so that were 500 or above. That's just untenable. And I don't see any teams that really want to get worse. Some teams are going to naturally get worse because it's how it's going to be. But I don't know. We'll find out. We'll find out what it looks like. And there's plenty of time to speculate about it. I'm very curious. Answering some questions here. Dropping Scoops asked a while back, regarding Reggie Jackson's player option, do you think he will come back? It's kind of been the consensus that if he does come back, he's getting traded. It's up to Reggie. I think that he'll probably just want to lock in the $5 million, because if he does, it's a $5.2 million player, player option, excuse me. It's an extra $2 million than what he's going to get as a veteran minimum, and I think he's in line for a veteran minimum. I don't really expect that, so I think that no matter where he plays, he's going to lock in the extra $2 million. That's just feels reasonable. And wherever he plays, he'll figure it out. Because hypothetically, let's say he gets traded to a not contending team, then he might be able to agree to a buyout at some point, give back some of that extra money, and then go to a champion on a contender or on a veteran minimum or something of that nature. But yeah, I think he's opting in. I'd be shocked if he didn't. My dog says, I'm such a loony Jokic fan, I'm rooting for Serbia to win gold medal. I firmly agree with that. I will not be rooting for Team USA. I would be rooting for Team Serbia. I'll root for Team Canada as well, because it sounds like Jamal Murray is going to play too. Jesus says, Ryan, will you be doing a free agency target episode? Of course. I've done a couple in terms of like the Bruce Brown mold. There's an episode a couple back within this playlist that during the second segment of that, I listed off like 15 to 20 names of different players that Denver could target. I will be doing more of that next week. This week, I'm going to focus a little bit more on the draft. Tomorrow, I'm actually going to do an episode with C.T. Fazio, resident Nuggets fan and draft analyst. He's very good at what he does. We did a draft episode last year, talked about Julian Strother. We did not talk about Jalen Pickett and Hunter Tyson. I wonder if that was for a reason. All right. Let's take a break. When we come back, we are going to chat about the best teams in the 2024-25 season. Should be a good conversation. But first, got to tell everybody about number 38, the home base for Mile High Sports for Denver Stiffs watch parties. Love being over there. Get some brunch. Get a beer on tap. Get lots of different options over there. I love their fried chicken sandwich. It's one of my favorites. They do some good dips. Do some good mixed drinks as well. And they've got an outdoor patio area where if you're looking to be outside during the summer, but you also want a nice beverage and you want to hang out and maybe listen to some live music, it's the place to be. Head on over to number 38 in Rhino. Let them know that you came from Mile High Sports.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
And we're back. Pickaxe and Roll, Ryan Blackburn here. Thank you so much for tuning into the show. Appreciate all the love and support on the podcast, folks. Make sure to leave a like and subscribe to the video if you are hanging out. Would greatly appreciate it. Okay. Let's get into the best teams in the 2024-25 season. This is obviously very early. But the reason why I'm doing this and why I want to emphasize this to Nuggets fans is that I do not think the Nuggets are the favorite in 2024-25. If you just take what the teams are right now and you fast forward a year, or you kind of go through what the general expectation is for what those teams are going to look like going forward, like the Philadelphia 76ers are going to add to their roster. They've been gearing up to add to their roster this offseason for a while. They're going to be a force as long as they stay healthy. The Oklahoma City Thunder are going to be a force. They're the youngest team in the NBA, or one of them, and they also have the most resources. They have 30-plus million in cap space this offseason. This is an opportunity for them to get better. So I expect for them to do so. I expect for them to try. And they are the team that I think is the biggest threat in the 2024-25 season. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander nearly won an MVP. Jalen Williams, who was already very good in his second season, will be in his third season, and I expect to be even better. Like, he was a borderline all-star. Chet Holmgren, who people forget was a rookie last year, will be in his second season. And then they've got Lu Dort. They've still got Josh Giddey, but though they may decide to trade him, they'll probably sign him to an extension, though. And then they've got this bench. They've got all these different guys that you can point to and say, hey, yeah, that guy's going to look better. That guy's going to be better. But even more than that, they have flexibility. They've got draft picks out the wazoo. They've got millions of dollars in cap space. And they have this one sort of opportunity right now before they get really expensive. And they're going to try to capitalize on it, I think. I think they're going to be a very interesting team to monitor. And they're going to wait for the right guy. They're going to build the right team. Sam Presti's done a great job with that group, as has Mark Daigneault, who I think was the coach of the year, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, coach of the year. They have a great team. And I expect them to be the best team in the NBA from a regular season standpoint. They have young guys that they can develop that are going to get better. They have the ability to get better on the outside. They've got a team that is clearly connected, and they've got energy. And teams that have depth and energy are going to kill in the regular season. So I expect them to be very good. They nearly were the best team in the NBA this last year. I think they will jump and they'll win over 60 games next year. Number two is the Boston Celtics, who I think will have a small drop-off from 64 wins, but I don't really expect that to be a large drop-off of any sort. They're going to bring their same team back. I don't know how, like, they're not losing a Bruce Brown like Denver was. Denver did get better from a regular season perspective when they lost Bruce Brown, but not from a playoff perspective. And it was harder for Denver to get those 57 wins than it was for them to get the 53 wins that they got the previous season. So I'm going to expect that Boston, like, I think the East is going to be a lot better next year. I think New York will be healthier for the entire time. Philly's going to be a better team. That's at least my expectation from the outset. The Cavs, as long as Donovan Mitchell comes back, they'll be better. Orlando will be a year older. Indiana's going to bring back Pascal Siakam. Like, those teams are going to be better. So it's going to be harder to be a great team in the East than it was this past season for Boston, but they will still clearly be the best team in the East. So I think that they'll be good. They'll probably win about 58 to 60 games still. Next, I still have the Denver Nuggets because I think that they'll probably re-sign KCP. They still have the best player in the world. And the theory of the practice with the young guys, especially off the bench, is that like it or hate it, with the plan that they went with this year, the goal should be, and has, like, I think it'll bear out that this happens, that the Nuggets will be better going forward because of the experience that Christian Brown, Peyton Watson, even Julian Strother got. Like, those guys should be better. They should be ready to contribute on a reasonably regular basis. Christian Brown, I think, will be a better player in his third year than he was in his second. Peyton Watson, I would expect to be a better player than he was in his second. Julian Strother, I think, is going to be a better player. And Denver might continue to add. How much they're able to add versus how much they lose from just sort of the half-life of being a championship contender and having as much emphasis on that as they have, I don't know. But Jamal Murray's got to be a better player. I think he will be. And I just expect the Nuggets to bounce back a little bit. Like, this is, it could be a year where they're a 4 seed or a 5 seed or something like that, and they decide, okay, we're going to save it all for the playoffs. I'm not sure if that's the way that they're going to handle it. They'll probably just be naturally pretty good. Number 4, I have the Dallas Mavericks. I don't think that they are going to be that much worse than they were at the end of the year. The only guy that they may not bring back is Derek Jones Jr., who was a very helpful piece for them. Don't get me wrong. But they can also replace him in a reasonable way, I think. He was a minimum contract signing for them and turned out to be great. He turned out to be a really, really helpful player who started for much of the season for them. But I think that he is also replaceable because they've now found their formula, right? Like, Luka and Kyrie are going to be very important from a ball creation standpoint. PJ Washington is their connector, their Aaron Gordon. They have their rim runner in Daniel Gafford or Derek, more likely Derek Lively going forward. And they've got so many different options off their bench. So that's going to continue. I think they will have the flexibility. And I think that this is just the beginning for them. They will probably win about 50-55 games in that general vicinity. So going to be fascinating to see if they can continue that. I think that next year is finally the year that Luka Doncic wins his MVP. That would be my guess. Unless OKC is actually the best team in the league and Shea is just out of this world again, that'll be an interesting battle. Number 5, the Philadelphia 76ers. This one feels a little bit shaky just because they were the 7th seed this last year. Joel Embiid has got to stay healthier in order for this to actually happen. But I do think that they are getting a third max player. I think they're getting Paul George. All the signs are leading to them getting Paul George. If he is there in between Maxey and Embiid, then they'll have the flexibility to build a solid team around them, whether it's Nick Batum and Kelly Oubre, whether they bring back D'Anthony Melton, whether they go out and sign somebody else in addition to what they got. Like, they have the flexibility because they've cleaned house with their roster, or at least have the flexibility to do that. They'll bring back some of the guys to help them get there. But I think that Paul George is at the top of their list, not really breaking any news here. And I think that that's going to make them very dangerous. Because while it does look like for most teams, the third max player is not going to be a thing, I think that for the Sixers, it could be. We'll just have to see. Have to see what happens. Number 6, the New York Knicks. They were very good during the regular season when they were healthy. Then they got hurt. I'm a little bit worried that that's a Tibbs thing, that that's just how that team is going to look, and they're going to look worse and worse and worse over time because they're just worn down. Like, you've got guys like Deuce McBride who are playing 48 minutes in a game because he has to, because Tibbs never takes him out of the game. I wonder if that's going to be a thing that really hurts them, but they surprisingly have a lot of depth, and they have some flexibility where they could add some pieces, because Jalen Brunson, their best player, is only making like $25 million a year. Like, it's a great contract. Think about this. Jokic is making 50. Now imagine doubling Jalen Brunson's contract, and that's what Joker makes. It makes it a little bit more flexible to build your team, and they're going to have to spend some of that money on OG Anunoby to retain him, but I think they will. I wonder if they trade Julius Randle, try to get him to a better spot where maybe they can find a little bit of a better fit for their team, but who knows? Maybe Julius Randle can fit right in and make some sense too. It's been very interesting to see the Knicks kind of be just a really solid team. I think that they're going to elevate. Number 7, the Minnesota Timberwolves, who beat Denver in this last year. I think that the T-Wolves, they're going to lose some guys. They're going to go through the Bruce Brown situation where Denver lost their guy. Aaron Gordon is not the second best player on the Nuggets. Just want to, I'm seeing that in the comments. Jamal Murray is the second best player on the Nuggets. He didn't play like that in the second round of the playoffs, but he is the second best player on the Nuggets. Full stop. We are quick to forget. Minnesota Timberwolves have a very expensive roster. They're going to lose some guys. They're probably losing Monte Morris. They'll probably lose Kyle Anderson. Not sure how much they're going to be able to pay in order to keep those guys. They'll probably try to fix some things on the fringes, but the base of their team is still very good. Mike Conley is a very cheap contract for them in balancing out with a guy like Karl-Anthony Towns or Rudy Gobert, who are not cheap contracts for them. They are very, very difficult. But I do think that Minnesota teams are going to start figuring out how to attack their defense a little bit more. And I just don't think that their offense is going to develop in the ways that they're hoping. Maybe Jaden McDaniels becomes a little bit more reliable, a little bit more consistent. But is Towns going to get that much better in his role? Is Mike Conley? Is Rudy Gobert? Like, those guys are who they are. Like, Ant, there's only so much he can continue to grow. Maybe he becomes a 35-5 guy. I don't know, but I sort of doubt it. I don't think that that's the trajectory that he's going to take. But who knows? Maybe that's just what they do. And then Cleveland is the last team. I think that they deserve some credit if they're able to re-sign Donovan Mitchell. Like, they are a team that should be good enough. And they built this team that they had and ultimately did not have Jared Allen for the entire second round of the playoffs. That would have helped them. It wouldn't have changed anything against Boston, but it would have helped them for sure. And then they lost Donovan Mitchell in those last couple games anyway. I'm curious to see what happens with them as long as they are able to retain Donovan Mitchell. If he's traded in the offseason, obviously, this would be a different thing. But Mitchell's very good. Can he be the best player on a championship team? Probably not, but this is where the cutoff line is. I think those top 7 teams, I think, can win a title. Cleveland is probably the team where you start thinking, yeah, they probably can't. Okay, let's take a final break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the non-Jokic minutes. I've got a radical thought that I think it's going to be very, very interesting to see what the Nuggets decide to do to solve their non-Jokic minutes. What if they just played Nikola Jokic? We'll be right back on Pickaxe and Roll.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Pickaxe and Roll, Ryan Blackburn here. Thank you so much for tuning into the show. Appreciate all the love and support on the podcast. If you can, please rate, review, and subscribe to the pod on Apple Podcasts to help it kind of share out a little bit. That would be tremendous as we continue to do this show in the off season. Like I said, I'm going to be doing a show with CT Fazio. We're going to cover the draft and a bunch of draft prospects tomorrow night. We'll probably do that at 9 p.m. about the same time. And that should be a fun conversation I'm looking forward to. And then we will do a little bit more free agency stuff either later, like on Friday night, or we will do it next week at some point. But there will be some time to do that as well. All right. Been a lot of discussion, and this is sort of the discussion about the Nuggets in general, about the non-Jokic minutes, the bench minutes, the minutes where your best player is not on the floor. How did the Nuggets solve the problem? It's the age-old question. It's the one that they've been struggling to figure out. What they ultimately found in the playoffs last year, 2022-23, when they won the championship, was staggering Jamal Murray and Aaron Gordon, playing Gordon as your backup center, having a stable veteran forward next to him and Jeff Green who could switch onto fives, and then having Bruce Brown and Christian Brown was ultimately good enough in most cases. Denver did go with some different looks, but the base look that they gave, especially in those first two rounds, and then in the finals actually, was pretty good. It was a pretty solid look. Part of it was because Murray was at his best. He was playing at a different level. He was playing at an all-star caliber level, all-NBA caliber level. And that changes the inflection of and like the potency of that kind of a group. When Murray is playing like he is in the regular season, where he's good, not great, then it's a little bit different. It is a less potent option, and Denver hemorrhages points for the most part. They can't score in those cases. And you also take out Bruce Brown. You replace Jeff Green, who's a little bit more of a floor spacer, with Peyton Watson, who is not. And then you replace, in a lot of those cases, Reggie Jackson in place of Bruce Brown. And it's just not going to fly. It's just not good enough. So Denver, they got to figure out a group that can work. They got to figure it out. Well, they've tried. And I remember talking about this during the end of the regular season this year. Is that Denver's tried a lot of different things. They've gone to a lot of different combinations, different players. Like, are you going multiple starters? Are you going different kinds of bench units? Are you going just Porter as your second unit guy? Are you going Murray and Porter? Murray, Porter, and Gordon? Like, Denver's done a variety of different things. And ultimately, what the big problem is none of those are sustainable options. None of those work. Denver hasn't been able to find what is something that they could depend on consistently. And one of the reasons I think that is because Murray, Porter, and Gordon, I think, are Jokic-dependent players in a lot of ways. They're at their best because of how they play off of Denver's best player, how they riff off of what he does, how they can play within a flow of an offense. You don't necessarily need the ball to be effective. You screen, you cut, you receive the ball when you need to, you make a play, you score, somebody else scores, doesn't matter. But that's what Jokic does. He makes things work. Denver, in a lot of ways, has tried to recreate the Jokic offense with second unit guys. And they'll run Zeke Nagy as a DHO option, or they'll run him as a dive option when he doesn't really have the hands or the offensive gravity in order to actually do that. They will run pick and roll, and it just skids towards like pull-up twos instead of floaters for Jokic or post-touches for him. And sometimes that can make all the difference within the offense, is where you finish the ball. But I think that one of the things I would experiment with if I were Denver is the one thing that they haven't tried before. They've never done it. They've never done it consistently anyway. Why not make Jokic the stagger guy? Why not make him the guy who plays with the second unit? You might be thinking, who does that? Luka Doncic does it. Jason Tatum does it. Steph Curry does it. Giannis Antetokounmpo does it. It's something that is pretty consistent throughout a lot of players, a lot of first option minutes, is that in order to power up your second unit, the unit that is generally a bad one, why not give it your best player? Especially for a team like Denver that doesn't have a great second unit center, somebody that can run stuff with the second group. Why not have Jokic do it? Why not build a lineup that's around him? And it's mostly because he doesn't want to, I think. I think that's the reason why they haven't done it. And I've heard this from people. It's that Jokic doesn't want to do that. He doesn't want to play three stints every half. He wants to play two. He wants to play a long first quarter stint and a long second quarter stint, as opposed to three mid-sized, like, six-minute stretches. And I understand that. I get that. He's grown up playing one thing. He's got the, like, it's just how he's comfortable with. He's the best player in the world while he does it. Why would you change it? Well, it might be Denver's best case. It might be their best way to win. And it's the one thing that they haven't tried. They've tried everything with the other groups, and I don't think that they've been able to get flexible enough with the non-Jokic minutes, because in order to do so, they would have to stagger three separate players, not just one, like they usually do with Murray. They would have to, in order to keep Jokic's minutes the same, like first 10 minutes to 12 minutes of the first quarter and the third quarter, and then a longer second and fourth quarter stint, but this starts in the middle of it. Instead of doing that, I would have Jokic exit at the six-minute mark of the first quarter, and you keep your starters out there in those minutes, and then when he comes back in, he's playing with mostly bench guys by that time. It's Reggie Jackson, it's Julian Strother, it's Christian Brown, Peyton Watson. And then you turn that lineup into a positive group, and then the starters, all they have to do is not be negative when they're mostly all playing together anyway. It's just without Joker. So I think that there's merit to it, at least trying to. I think it's interesting. Here's one way that they could do it. Jokic and the starters play for 6 minutes together. Then Jokic sits, and the other four starters, plus a bench center, play for 2 minutes. KCP and Aaron Gordon then sit at the four-minute mark of the first quarter. Christian Brown and Peyton Watson enter. That group plays for 2 minutes. Murray, Porter, Christian Brown, Peyton Watson, backup center. Then Jokic comes back in at the two-minute mark of the first quarter. He returns for that bench center, and the backup point guard enters for Murray, and a backup wing/forward enters for MPJ. Let's say it's Reggie Jackson and Julian Strother. You play that group for 6 minutes. That's the thing about some of these Murray lineups that people criticize him about, is those groups play a lot. They play a long time together. That's the design of what Denver's rotation is supposed to do, so it gives the rest of Denver's starters enough rest. But it puts Murray into a position where he's carrying a bunch of bench minutes. It's not what should be happening. Why not have Jokic do that? He can carry anything. That's the point of having Jokic, right? He's the highest floor raiser in the NBA. See what he can do. That would be my theory. That would be my theory of the practice. And I think it's a good one. I think it's an interesting idea, and Denver should try it. I'm not sure if Jokic will be willing, but this is what you should be doing in the first 20, 25 games of the regular season. You should be playing around with stuff, trying different things, doing your best to find different solutions to problems with the players on your roster, as opposed to what Denver did last year, which is just cut guys out of the rotation altogether. Like, okay, that player can't play, or that player can't play. Denver should be trying to find ways to get as many players to play as possible. And this is, I think, one of the ways that they could do it. Because you could play anybody with Jokic. You just got to be willing to try. So, even if this doesn't happen, my most important point, my final point in this, the Nuggets have to be creative. They've got to be more creative with their solutions. The Timberwolves figured them out in the playoffs. Being up 20 in Game 7 doesn't matter here. Like, the Timberwolves figured them out. When Denver lost the rope, they could not get it back in Game 6 and Game 7. And as I discussed in the last segment, I think they're about the 7th or 8th best team in the NBA next year. So there will be other teams that might be less positioned to guard Denver, but will still be more talented teams that I think will really be a bother for Denver. So next year, I think another team will force Denver to not be their best self. And Denver should be doing everything they can to fight against that. They should be doing everything they can, especially during the regular season, to come up with different ways for them to be playing their best basketball in May and in June. Not April, not March, not January, not February. May and June, because that's what Denver is. They're a second-round playoff team that wants to be a champion again. That's the level that they're at. So next year, they got to peak at the right time. You do what you have to do to get the play the best basketball that you possibly can. These other teams are going to do the same thing. Denver's working with the second apron in mind. They're going to have to figure out how to navigate that, whether that's by bringing back KCP, whether that's by doing something more creative with the other stuff. I just think that you've got to find ways to peak at the right time. Play your best basketball. Try shit. And if it works, then maybe you've got something that can work in the playoffs too. If it doesn't, then you've at least figured out that it doesn't, rather than sit back and try to figure out if it will or not. Denver's got to play guys like Jalen Pickett. They got to play guys like Hunter Tyson. If they draft a 28th overall, whether it's Baylor Shireman or Daron Holmes or whoever they're getting, got to play those guys. Because that's how you win in the NBA today. Got to find ways to succeed. So, I'm curious to see how they handle it. I think that Denver can win a title in 2024-25. Would I have them as the title favorite right now? No, because they've got to figure it out. Murray's got to be better. Porter's got to be better when the deck is stacked against him. And Jokic has to be the best player in the world. I think he was. But as the Nuggets have figured out, it's more than that. Entire team's got to show up. This could be a way for them to do it. All right. That is going to do it for this episode of Pickaxe and Roll, brought to you by our good friends over at Number 38 and Bet Online. Thank you so much for tuning into the show, folks. Appreciate all the love and support on the podcast, as always. I'll be back tomorrow doing NBA Draft Talk. If you've missed any of the articles that I've put out over the course of these last couple days, did a point guard preview for the NBA draft, 5 different players that I think Denver could draft on Monday. And then on Tuesday, today, I did shooting guards. Tomorrow, you guessed it, gonna do some small forwards. We'll talk Baylor Shireman and others. Thank you so much. Make sure to go check it out. Hit the like button on the way out. I'll talk to you guys tomorrow night.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.